This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy. Woo! And sadness. Oh. And anger. Ah. Definitely some disgust.
Rose!
And I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Welcome to Sharing Plate, a podcast all about food and the role it plays in our sense of self, our sense of place, and of course, our sense of taste. I'm Laura Bishop, and I'll be hosting guests from around the world as they share their plates that connect them to home, wherever that may be. To their people, whoever they are, and to their own special memories. This is a foodie's journey that transcends generations and nations. So please, come sit with us as we serve up recipes and stories.
My best friend and I decided to go for an ice cream. As we were walking back home, there were two guys coming towards us, and one of them was kind of getting the pistol ready to shoot.
So we're going to a completely new area this week, and I'm really excited to hear what my guest has to say about her journey to the UK and all the yummy foods that are going to come with it. So over to you, if you could introduce yourself, please.
My name is Sasha Djurković. I've been living in the UK for nearly 30 years now, so a long time. I come from Sarajevo, from Bosnia, well, Yugoslavia. I kind of still identify myself as Yugoslav.
So let's go to your first dish, which is the pie. Tell me about this pie, how you make it.
Well, the dish, it's called gibanica. So this is the cream. It's my favourite pie. There is something about gibanica, this pie that is so juicy and gooey and just fat and just gorgeous. It's my favourite breakfast back home. I mean, it's, you know, you eat that and then you have to kind of go on a run. But it soaks up all the alcohol from the night before, you know. It's like bacon and eggs, basically. It's more like a Serbian dish than Bosnian dish. Made with eggs and lots of feta cheese and cream and oil.
Three of my favourite things. Cream, cheese, oil.
You crunch up some feta and some cottage cheese, and then you put some sour cream into it. Now I'm going to add 5 eggs. There's a secret ingredient, though. I'm not sure if I can tell you.
Can you? Ooh, only it's only me and all of our listeners that are going to know.
We'll see by the end of it.
Secret ingredient. Okay, I'm going to come back to that a bit later then.
I really hate cooking for myself, but I really like cooking when I have guests around. And I think that's, again, something that kind of connects me to back home, because, you know, we do have a culture of people coming to each other's houses, eating each other's houses. You know, you either cook things together sometimes, you know, with lots of my friends, we would cook things together. So my secret ingredient is the sparkling water that will go into my pie, believe it or not. But it will really make it fluffy. That's why you put the sparkling water in it, because then the phyllo pastry, when it's mixed with the mass of the cheese and eggs and sparkling water, it becomes kind of quite soft and lively. I know it's ridiculous that I still identify myself as Yugoslav, because the country doesn't exist, but I always say it's the country that I was born in and the country that I left. I really identify as a girl from Sarajevo because it gives you certain culture, dialect, sense of humor. And the oil.
Talk to me about the changes that you saw in Sarajevo.
Well, I was brought up in a household where your nationality and religion really wasn't part of the conversation, and it never really mattered who I was hanging out with. Neither did my parents really cared whether they were hanging out with, you know, my mom is Croatian, my dad is Serb, and I grew up in a Muslim quarter. And then suddenly, you know, the war was in Croatia, and we had the first kind of refugees arriving in a high school, and we were really confused. I remember just being really confused about the girl called Eva that came, and what was it, you know, what happened to her, and why did she came, and all that kind of stuff. And little did we know that we would be in her shoes within less than 6 months.
And how old were you then?
So I was 17 when the war started, and we just didn't believe that it would take off. We didn't believe, because Sarajevo was such a melting pot, that it was just unimaginable. It's like, who do you fight against? You fight against your neighbour? Like, why? It's my neighbour. I mean, it's ridiculous. Okay, so the next stage in making Gibbon, it's that I will now do the filo pastry. When I was a child, you know, my mom would used to send me to the little shop around the corner. So you go in a room and there is a huge table, and on the table there is a filo pastry stretch. So they make it really, it's like pizza. And they were stretching it around, you know, wearing their white costumes and the little hats on. And they would stretch it, you know, around the table. They will walk around and stretch it and stretch it and stretch it. And then somebody comes in with a knife and they will cut those things. And, you know, I remember just as a child, just waiting. And all you need to say is 400 grams, 300 grams, whatever. You know, they know, they only sell filo pastry. It always smells so beautiful. And then they wrap it in a paper, in one of those slightly oily papers that make just great sound. And, you know, you'll just see the kids kind of coming out, carrying the filo pastries for their mums to make the pie. Oh, these feel like a good ones. They really do. Oh, I love. Oh, it's just lovely to touch. It literally feels like linen. And I'm going to put two sheets now into the baking tray.
And then the rest of the sheets, you rip them into little pieces. And I dip them into the mixture, into the filo.
Into the bowl.
So into the bowl where all the mixture is. So they kind of, the filo pastry will soak up the cheese and the eggs and becomes this kind of gooey mixture that's really tasty.
Chook, 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 chook. Don't you break on me, little filo pastry. Come on. I was 21 and I didn't really speak the language when I came to the UK. And I remember going to Knightsbridge and looking for a bridge. And I remember coming to one of those porters at the hotel going, where is the bridge? And he was looking at me like, what is going on with you, girl? What bridge? This is now ready to go into oven. We don't have to eat it if it's not good.
How long does it take to cook? Roughly.
I think altogether maybe about half an hour, 45 minutes. So it's relatively quick dish, because a lot of the dishes from back home, especially the winter ones, they take a long time, they take days. You know, I kind of got really excited when you said that, you know, that you're going to come over, and I kind of want to do beans, and, you know, I would have to cook the beans yesterday. You know, it takes a long time, Osarma. So I just thought I'd keep it simple and cook the stuff that can be done with the normal amount
of time. What kind of beans? Just out of interest, because no matter where they're from, everybody on Sharing Plate, the majority have had a dish with beans in?
Sure, it's called pasul, which is the word for the beans. But the idea is that you would cook the beans in the water and then throw that water away so nobody farts afterwards.
Brilliant.
And then you cook it again and then you throw the water again. So you never really fully cook them. They just boil and you kind of take that away. And then when you cook them with the bay leaves and then you can put the meat and all the seasoning and stuff. And you cook it for a very long time on a very slow heat. So it's slowly cooked.
Slow cook. So on a, are we talking like an all day or a...
Few hours. We're talking about few hours. I ran out of patience, so I just kind of like...
Crank it up.
I was like, come on, let's go.
And who cooked that in?
So my dad would actually make the beans. But you have so many different recipes. And the one that I would use, once you kind of cook all of that and you make your zaprška and you make that kind of sauce that would go in it, which is made out of the flour and paprika powder and oil, I would then put it in the oven. And you add onions, big slices of onions, and then you bake it in the oven for a little bit for all of that juice to be taken. You know, the beans really swallow the juice of it. And it's just yummy, but it just takes the whole day. And I do it once a year, usually in the winter, and that's it.
It sounds delicious. Can I book a seat at that table, please?
Of course. Of course.
So sitting, talking about both of those dishes, you know, you said your mum with the phyllo pastry dish, the pie, your dad cooked the beans. Who's sitting at the table when you're eating?
Well, I was a single child, so it was just three of us. But we, you know, there is a culture of people coming for dinner and having always people around. And, you know, you always have to be fed. So you can't, you know, it's one of the first things that you ask people if they come in, you know, if they're hungry and they have to eat something. And, you know, I remember going to see my aunt in Belgrade and I wasn't even asked if I was hungry. I was sat at the table and the food was given. She was Hungarian and she used to make amazing, amazing food. But you always have to eat. It's the kind of thing that you can't be hungry. It is steaming hot.
It looks so good.
It smells all right. It smells how it should smell. Would you like a little kind of yogurt-y kind of thing that you should have with it?
Yes.
I mean, it's like, this is not vegan food at all. Everything is full fat in this dish.
Oh my God, it's so good. Like the crispiness of the phyllo pastry on top, and then it's really crispy down the bottom, and then it's all fluffy, and the feta is just it cuts through the eggs, and the yogurt finishes it off. Really good. I didn't know what Yugoslavian food was going to be. I didn't expect it to be this.
Do I miss home? Yes and no. I miss home that doesn't exist anymore. You know, my parents would have their friends coming in and, you know, you always have a little shot of rakia when people come in. That's your kind of welcoming drink.
What's rakia?
So rakia, I think, I don't know whether we got rakia from Turks or we gave it to Turks, but it's distilled plum brandy, basically. And you have different flavours, and especially these days now, it's kind of everything's gone upmarket. There was a little restaurant in Belgrade that I used to love to visit, and they would sell one made out of wild pears, and that was quite something. So that's your welcoming drink. And then after that, you might drink beer or wine. Or if you don't have a dinner, you will always have meze. You always have to eat when you drink. Drinking alone was not an option. I also miss the sense of carefree life that I had when I was a teenager growing up. And somehow future felt safe.
today felt safe and tomorrow felt safe. And then it didn't.
The war happened. And it's really interesting how quickly it happens. And how, it, you know, when Corona was happening, that feeling of knowing that there is a menace in the air, that something is coming your way. You can't identify what it is, but you know it's coming fast and you don't know how to protect yourself. That was the same feeling that I remember as a child kind of having. And then there was another part of me thinking, fuck this. You know, I'm just going to like go and live my life because I don't belong to any sides. So my best friend and I decided to go for an ice cream. It was Sunday, and usually on Sunday we would have this little ritual that she would come to my place. We would have lunch, and then we would watch Beverly 90210.
Beverly Hills 90210.
That's right. Then we would watch this scientific program called Beyond 2000. And then there was a black and white movie at 5 o'clock. And it was Sunday and we decided that we were going to go to the ice cream parlor, which was a really famous ice cream parlor called Egypt in Sarajevo. It's right in the city center. And we had to walk for about 20 minutes, half an hour. You know, they sell only one type of ice cream, vanilla, and it was famous for it. There was always queue. So we thought, oh, great, let's have an ice cream because there will be no queue. So that was our mission. And then we get into the city centre and there was nobody around. It was completely apocalyptic. And we were like, oh, well, let's go back home. And as we were walking back home, there were two guys coming towards us. And one of them was kind of getting the pistol ready to shoot. And I remember looking at him and going like, well, never mind that we didn't watch Beyond 2000 because we ain't going to live beyond 2000. But damn, we're going to miss the film at 5. And we were walking up expecting to get the gunshots in our backs. And that didn't happen. It was just like a massive relief. And as we walked down the hill, there were guys with balaclavas, with kalashnikovs. And we just looked at each other and we legged it the fast as we could up the hill to the point where we would split up. And it was like, you tell your mom that I was in your place and I'm telling my mom that I was in your place. And we never spoke about this. And this year, for the first time, we revisited that moment. And it was really bizarre how clearly it was in both of our memories.
You revisited it this year. Does that because you've been back?
So, yeah, this summer I had a 30th high school reunion. People flew from all over the world.
Is that because everyone's displaced to those places and living in those places?
Yeah, I think when war started, you know, those of us who could leave left. I mean, there was massive brain drain in Bosnia after the war. 70% of my generation lives abroad.
And 70%?
70. 70.
Wow.
That was the whole generation. You know, there was this hunger to be together and to kind of catch up for all of those days that we didn't have the time. Many of us didn't even kiss. And suddenly now you're meeting the adults who have wives and husbands and kids and they got divorced and, you know, the life happened in the meantime. But when we get together, you go back to being 16 again. You know, you have quick catch up about, you know, what you're doing, but mostly you talk about what happened in high school. You just don't want to stop being a teenager. It's an excuse to be a teenager. And of course, we only play the music that's we listened to at that time. You know, it's The Cure, it's The Clash, it's the REM, it's the U2, David Bowie. You know, that music from like late 80s and early 90s would be on, and you party like you're 16. You because in your head you are. That's the thing. You kind of don't want reality to kind of come into your little bubble of your childhood and disturb it, because you just want to be in that world of being safe and having fun, because you're carefree. It's, yeah, lovely.
something that all of our guests have said is you never believe in your worst nightmares that this is going to happen to you. You know, you're living your life, you're with your family, you've got a good life, and then bang.
And then
warning.
Yeah, and then normality goes, and it goes really quickly. And I think in Sarajevo it went within 2 weeks. You know, I remember very clearly the gunshots at night. You hear the bombs somewhere in the distance. I remember we had some cranes not too far from where I lived, and my neighbor kind of going up, climbing. And then he was standing, and then he wasn't. And then people coming up to carry his body down. And that's where I realized, oh shit, has hit the fan. This is real. Your hormones are still working, though. That's the thing, because I remembered when there was, you know, there were kind of going to be a sirens and we're going to have to go into the shelter. And I was thinking, hang on, which shelter I'm going to go to? Because there's a boy from that block of flats that I really like. So if I'm going to go to that shelter, let me just see what can I take with me, what earrings and what trousers and what shirt. And I was going to that shelter, you know, ready, you know, for the love affair.
But I think that's another thing that people think, isn't it? Life does go on to a certain extent. Obviously, you had to leave, but whilst you're still there, like going to the ice cream shop, like thinking about what lipstick or earrings you might wear to the shelter because the boy that you like is going there, life doesn't stop.
And every time you think this can't get worse, and it does, and then you think it can't get worse, and it does. But I remember my friends talking about, especially the boys, you know, who were just using any chance to get the girls during the war in various of shelters or whatever they were. And they're saying, well, look, you know, grenades can just blow us all up. So you might as well, you know, take your T-shirt off for me, love.
Oh, my goodness. It's like... But I,
well,
you know,
they were
18,
19-year-old boys, you know, and I don't know how many of us had sex or kissed somebody before the war started. So it was now or never. I mean, you know, we have a really dark sense of humour back home, so I just need to turn it down a little bit for the English audience.
Well, I think, you know, I think also every refugee I speak to has the same kind of thing of you either laugh about this or you cry.
It's hard. My heart goes to them. I mean, I think I was really lucky that within a year I got a refugee status, which then enabled me to study. You know, I remember waitressing before I managed to study, and I just thought there is a black hole growing in my brain because I was so hungry for knowledge. I needed to learn something. And I self-taught English. My first book on English was Winnie the Pooh, and I would kind of walk around with Winnie the Pooh and the dictionary and force myself to read the book.
What did you think of the food when you arrived in England? What can you do? Can you remember any of those early days and meals that you might have eaten?
I ate lots of cornflakes and milk because I had no money for more. So it was cornflakes all the way. I ate lots of toast as well.
Is there anything else that you used to do to kind of, you know, keep yourself alive, essentially?
To be honest with you, it didn't really... I mean, I was 21. Anything was possible. It didn't really matter. You know, I remember just going to any laundrette and just sit there because it was really warm and watch anybody's clothes being washed. You know, I find that watching washing machines so calming and kind of will do that. And then, you know, there were days when you kind of feel really lonely and, you know, I would kind of look at the people windows and what they're doing and what life are they having and are they happy and, you know, all that kind of stuff, the stuff that you could see when the lights go up. And thinking, you know, will I ever have that one day? And I think you do. You find your way and you do. But it just takes a long time.
Talk to me about your second dish. Because we're talking about home and looking at people's comfortable lives.
So it's interesting. For a long, long time, I really wasn't cooking anything that was kind of home food. One onion, it's enough. Last few years, I started to kind of crave to make stuff. And one of the first dishes that I did cook, and I did it completely out of my head. I had no recipe. And
I kind of somehow automatically knew what to do, is the peas. And it's a dish that I would have as a little girl when I was going to nursery, and you have your lunch at nursery and you have your peas, and, you know, it was just great kind of comfort food.
And now three little carrots.
Is there a name for this dish?
No,
it's just called peas. Okay, so tell me what's in this dish. How do you make it?
So you would fry some onions. I add some chili flakes just to kind of spice it up, flavor. I quite learned to like spicy food since coming here and eating lots of Indian and loving it. And then you take your meat cubes. Usually it's veal or beef in the chunks, and then you kind of stir that up a little bit till the meat gets brown.
Is veal kind of a staple food?
You would eat more. You wouldn't eat an old animal. You would eat a young animal. It sounds really horrible to anybody that is.
So you'd be having lamb as opposed to mutton. You'd be having veal as opposed to beef.
That's right. Okay. Yeah, and baby chicken, and baby pork, baby pigs on a spit.
Pork so crackling good. To me. So oh, it's just so all good. Of the juices. Yeah.
So good.
Anyway, I'm with you.
Anyway, you kind of stir the meat in kind of oil, hot oil and onions. And then I add carrots, who were just running away every time I wanted to.
Your carrots were lively.
They were really
literally
lively.
Skidded off the shopping board.
They would bounce off. Didn't want to be cooked. And potatoes in a big kind of chunks. And you stir that up for a bit. And then you boil water and you use one of those cooking cubes.
Stock cubes.
And
does it matter if it's vegetable or beef or
I think I used chicken once,
yeah.
So it doesn't really matter. Once you kind of get the sense that meat is kind of done its bit, you cover it with the water and leave that to boil, because peas takes very little time to be cooked. And then you add a bit more of water, and then you add your peas, and then I would add a spoon and a half or spoon of vegetta, which is a seasoning from back home that I grew up with and I managed to find it in a Lebanese shop, which is basically dry vegetables kind of mixed up. But it just like, you know, I used to watch this cooking program when I was a kid, and this cook was, only if you add a little bit of spoon of vegetta, everything will be fine. So I just followed the old
recipe.
Put it in everything. And I add a little bit of mirogie, which is like the herbs, mixed herbs, just to give it a little bit of flavour. And then in the end, I made something that we call zaprška, which is you heat the oil and then you add flour and you kind of mix that up really quickly so the flour doesn't become solid. And then you add some sweet pepper powder and you mix that up, and then you add a little bit of water from your dish. So I would put my flour and the oil and sweet pepper in there with peas to give it that gelatiny kind of flavour.
It thickens flavor. It thickens. Up, doesn't it? It's like
yeah,
the same
it's a thickener.
As... Yeah, it's a thickener.
It's thickener. It's thickener. That's the word that was looking for.
It makes
for.
Like a gravy consistency.
That's right. And then you leave that to boil for a little bit longer, and et voila. There's your food done.
It reminds me of a Sunday roast here. And I think because there's a lot of the same ingredients, the potatoes, the peas, the carrots, the meat.
The beef, yeah.
And then the stock, which is almost like a gravy by the end of it because it's cooked in the meat juices. It is a real comfort food.
My mum would cook it. My grandma would cook it. It's a staple. There's always a kind of thing that you have to eat something with a spoon. So you know, when you're in restaurant, you might order some kind of meat and potatoes and stuff like that, but you will have something with spoons. So you will have begova soup, begova chorba, which is like a thick soup with the pieces of meat and vegetables, and it's really yummy. Because, you know, if you don't eat with spoon, it's like you haven't really eaten properly.
I love that. I think in the UK, we're all very, you know, prim and proper about our knives and forks, but actually, comfort food is just a spoon in a big bowl, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah.
Sasha, I'm interested, when you came to the UK, now you're blonde and white, and how did you find it fitting in?
In terms of culture, I mean, it takes a long time till you really understand what somebody's saying. You know, people back home are way more direct. And you know much more quickly if somebody likes you or they don't like you, or, you know, you show your preferences. Sometimes I think what's said is in the silence.
The reason I asked you that question and I'm interested is because obviously recently, the most recent war that we've seen firsthand here is the Ukrainian war, and the way that the Ukrainian refugees have been welcomed to the UK.
Really, that, I mean, of course they should be welcomed, but it really made me angry. It's like, why they would be more welcome than somebody coming from Syria or from Yemen, to which we know very little about, or from Libya, or from Lebanon, or from Iraq.
I totally agree.
You know, it's of course that we should welcome, but we should welcome them all equally, because nobody leaves their home country because they're having a really good time, so they're going to go and go somewhere else, have a better time. You know, you leave because you are in desperation and you're trying to have a life. It was hard watching Ukrainian war because it really brought back the memories of Sarajevo war. You know, the buildings are the same, we look the same, the mechanics of it are the same almost. And I stopped watching the news because it would bring back those memories, and I just thought, I can't go back there anymore. There were some sentences that I would hear on BBC World Service that some Ukrainian boys would say, that identical that my friends would say. It was like, you know, one day you're sitting in a classroom and the next day you're carrying, you know, the gun and you shoot people and you think, what happened to me? And I think that's the problems with the wars, is like how quickly it's like a hurricane and just pulls you in. And you just have to somehow find your way to survive.
Where is home now?
Oh, it's really tricky because there is home in London. You know, I've been here nearly 30 years and I spend most of my time in the UK and I feel British when I go back home. And I can't wait to come back home when I'm in Belgrade or Sarajevo. You know, I really miss London and I miss my friends and I miss the culture, and can't say that I miss the weather, but I really miss Britain. There's a part of my home that's in Sarajevo and it will always stay there because I grew up there. So home is London, yeah.
Sasha, thank you so much for taking us on that really beautiful journey through your food memories and sharing your stories. And I'm very happy that you're in London, because I will be popping round for that yearly beans stew.
Do come in, actually, when I let you know when I come in beans. You're most welcome. I really enjoyed it. I mean, cooking was fun.
Sharing Plate is a What's Where Media production and is presented by Lara Bishop. Thank you for listening.
If you've enjoyed listening to Sharing Plate, please help us out. Like it, follow us, share it, and tell a friend.